Steven Dorff gets sucked into hell. Master Chief starts to finish the fight, and we're all living in the summer of George this week in 302010.
302010, 302010. Three decades, every show, sometimes associated videos. 302010, 302010. Surprises are awaiting if we're going to the 80s, then the 90s, and 2000s. From 302010.
Welcome to another episode of 302010, a weekly look back at what happened in movies, music, TV, and games. This week, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. Yeah. That's 87, 97, 2007, the week of May 12th to the 18th. I am one of your hosts, Brett Elston.
Biggest bomb in history, Chris Antista.
I'm a multiplayer beta cuck, Dave Rudden.
I am DreamWorks Dance Party Diana Gibbons.
Jesus. Thank you for time traveling with us, people.
But yeah, we look every week, 302010.net. You can follow along with the articles posted for each episode. All of our notes are posted up there. And of course, leaving a comment that we tend to read at the end of the show. But we always begin with a little bit of news. Well, occasionally begin with some news when relevant. But this week in 87... Mabro 400 Garbage Barge Saga. That is some rural juror. wow. Bob Loblaw's Law Blog. Mobro 400 Garbage Barge Saga.
Mo.
What?
Yeah. This is one of those things I remember there being jokes about, but not knowing what it was. And I looked into it, and it's so fucking funny.
A barge left NYC heading to North Carolina to dump 3,000 tons of trash into a methane pilot program.
What, you too good for our trash? North Carolina
officials turned it away, slowly heading south, looking for somewhere to accept it, getting rejected by 6 states and 3 countries. It got as south as Belize, turned around, and ended back in New York 5 months later.
Too good for our soiled pizza boxes.
You know why a pizza box is so good? It's the water.
Yeah.
This Two Brothers box is going to end up in South America.
This is original Ray's pizza box. Come on.
Maron.
You don't like dumping your trash on the street?
Oh!
You got to put trash in the box?
I'm barging here.
If you want to tie it to a reference, the Futurama garbage episode is based on this. We don't know where to put our garbage. We'll shoot it into space. Oh, shit, it's coming back.
Oh, yeah. But moving into movies this week in 1987, May 12th through the 18th, Personal Services.
What? Hold on.
Julie Waters.
Tell me something about this, Diana.
Directed by Terry Jones.
Terry Jones, still with us, sort of.
I work for Terry.
We'll get to that. It's what Julie Walters. Julie Waters? Julie Walters.
Says Walters, but I have to defer.
You mostly know her as the Weasley's mom. From all the Harry Potter movies. All
right.
She's been around for a million years. She's done a lot of good work. And she stars in this movie where she sort of kind of inadvertently starts a whorehouse.
Oh, and it happens.
It happens. And it's got a very cute bit in the trailer with director Terry Jones from Monty Python.
Yes. And check out this poster. This won't work for any of the listeners. What the hell?
Wow.
What the hell? That is a man in a bra and panties being whipped by a larger woman in bra and stockings. What it looks like from a different era.
Now this I gotta see.
Terry
Vestron Pictures presents a kinky comedy from the director of Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Hello. My name's Terry Jones, and I'd like to welcome you to this G-rated trailer promoting the film that I've just directed. Now, because this is a G-rated trailer, there are, of course, limits to what I can tell you about the film.
That's filthy. Really filthy.
I can, for example, tell you its title. It's called Personal Services. Look, to be quite honest, the whole problem is that Personal Services is all about... So, if you want to see for yourselves all the things we can't show you in this G-rated trailer, come and see Personal Services at your local whorehouse now. A cinema, damn!
Almost made it.
Terry Jones, Monty Python, and Labyrinth alum.
Yep.
You could have told me that was Hugh Grant narrating the trailer, and I would have believed it. Oh, I'm dreadfully sorry, I can't show you much of this movie.
You could have told me it was Stewie, and I would have believed it.
Yeah. No, Terry Jones is still with us in body, if not entirely. He's got a kind of dementia where he doesn't.
Sucks.
He has some trouble. I guess Michael Palin says, you know, sometimes he does fine, and sometimes...
Yeah, he's giving interviews, though, in that state.
Yeah.
The help of his family.
Yeah, part of it is that it's... Like, the thoughts are there, but they can't quite come out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's still public speaking through dementia. Pretty noble.
Dementia note. If you've been like him and Han about whether to do one of those genetic tests, like 23andMe things, we did one, and it tells you all kinds of various things. But there's several things that, like, I guess the FDA or somebody, one of the government agencies, wouldn't let them tell you because they're like, this needs to be more thoroughly vetted before you just tell someone, hey, you're more likely to get cancer. Like, you should vet that more. You can't just, like, say that. So they're like, all right, fine. So they just recently got approval to tell people, are you, like, the likely, I guess, your predisposition towards things like Alzheimer's, dementia, different kinds of weird things that you could have in you that won't manifest till you're, like, 60, 70, what, 50.
Wow.
But thankfully, Alzheimer's was not one of mine.
Oh. Yeah.
All right.
That's all. I was relieved to say. And if you're interested yourself, like, it was like, but it's one of those things, like, to find out that information, you have to click through like three things that go, no, really, this can cause a lot of stress if you find out that you are susceptible to Alzheimer's. Yeah. Like, to know that, like, it's in your guts right now. It might get you. We don't know if it will.
But that helps you plan, though.
You can plan, I guess, a little, but man, you just never know when it's going to happen. But I don't know. I thought that stuff was fascinating. Anyway, other movie this week. This movie rules so much. This is The Gate with Stephen Dorff.
Man, there is a passageway to the most evil place you can imagine. A gate behind which the demons wait to take back what was once theirs.
Basically, this is a kind of movie that never gets made anymore. It is a bunch of kids. Mm-hmm. Stephen Dorff is a child in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think it's rated R.
Let me check.
It's pretty violent in a good fantastical way. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw this as a little kid and then watched it again probably 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And wow, still awesome. Tons of great. There's one of these practical. It's basically, it's like these,
I've never seen anything like this in practical effects.
Yeah. So there's a house, and then in the backyard, big surprise, there's like a gate to hell underneath a tree. And crazy shit starts happening in the house, and the house just goes bonkers. But there's so many cool practical effects scenes, and there's some bad like claymation or whatever, but. Like, there's a scene where, like, it's like drywall, right? And, like, a bunch of hands start coming out of the wall. And, like, the effect of, like, it looks like solid drywall, but they made this thing elastic enough that what was once solid and people were leaning on, the way they shoot it, it's just, like, that looks so real.
So
in a way that CG never could.
Here's what they did, and it's fucking, it is insane. It is a world before CG, and this is why it holds up really well. There's these little characters called the Minions, these small, tiny demons that bite you.
Yeah.
They shot in a giant room and used forced perspective to use the actors to stand in way in the foreground and then develop slowly diminishing chest drawers and bedroom walls to real. Those are not claim. Some of that is not claymation. It's real people acting 40 feet in the, behind this. Like the only thing I can compare it to is, like, I know Lord of the Rings used it a lot for, like, when Elijah Wood is sitting next to Gandalf, he's actually sitting, like, you know, 9 feet away from him. And looking in the right spots, keeping the right eye lines. So a lot of these effects hold up because it's not stop motion.
Right.
It's real actors made to 20 feet away, made to look small. It looks crazy.
It's great. And there's an effect. And it's also like there's no adults really. There's teenagers and they are like peak 80s teens with like some crazy hair and outfits. Like, that's all fun. But there's like, it's just this kids in peril thing that the 80s did a lot of that, like, you never see now.
Yeah.
Like, with a bunch of, like, 10 years old and younger, Stephen Dorff looks down and there's an eyeball in his palm. And he stabs it with a shard of glass. And it's like, I saw that when I was probably 10 years old on TV somewhere. And, like, that stuck with me forever. Like, he just, like, looking down at his hand and, like, slowly opens his palm and there's a crazy eyeball, like, looking around in your own hand. Like, that's horrific. But really fun.
And I can't do this justice.
I was going to say, would you say if you like Stranger Things, you would like...
Yeah.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Right. It, like, this is that exact... like.
It's my second second visual joke, but if you look at... this is there was a special edition DVD, and, like, no one knew to film this set that was doing unprecedented special effects. Like, they're really, really nuts. But there are DVD special features where they explain to you how it's done, because a lot of it is in camera. And I just want you to marvel... at the bedroom sequence. That's the bedroom they built, and you can see the director standing next to the 7-inch tall minions.
Oh my gosh.
And the children were like right in front of the camera, and the bedroom was made to be giant sized 20 feet in the background as these little actors ran around.
Wow.
And so they look like they're in the same shot because they are.
Yeah.
It looks insane.
That bedroom door is like 30 feet tall.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
It's just a cool movie, and like
it holds up so well.
Yeah, I watched it knowing nothing about it as a little kid, and then probably in 07 I watched it again on like one of those on demand Comcast things, and like it was great. So definitely recommend The Gate, certainly over the next movie, which has gone down. Like, I only knew about this movie from like Far Side jokes and other
Mad Magazine,
Letterman, like Ishtar. Oof. Warren Beatty, Dustin Hoffman is number one at the box office, even though notorious bomb.
3, 2, 3, 4, 4, 2, 3, and
these men are pawns. I put a price of 20,000 dirham on their heads.
Next, they will be hailed as the true messenger of God.
They were just a couple of songwriters who came to Ishtar to break into show business.
Easy boy.
What the hell's the matter with him? Is he blind?
Well, yeah, he is, but he's in perfect condition.
He's a camel.
It's Diane, it's like an old Bing Crosby, Bob Hope road movie.
Yes.
But the budget swelled to astronomical proportions. Wow. People fought on set.
Yeah.
It was called, I think we talked about this. Elaine May directed it, a famous comedy duo, Nichols and May. And I think we talked about it in Birdcage because she didn't direct another movie until 1996 after the fallout of this film.
Yeesh.
It was called Coca-Cola's Big Blunder because they were in charge of Columbia Studio, now with a mandatory Sony logo at the beginning and then another Sony logo to tell you they own Columbia, which I know. I don't need to see this twice. This movie's insane, and I grew up with this being in the zeitgeist for 15 extra years, but as a punchline, not as a beloved film.
Yeah.
And if you read Mad Magazine from 1989 to 1995, you'd know it from that. There's a famous Far Side video store in hell where all the movies are Ishtar. It's not that bad.
It's that's the surprising thing is that I always heard this is a legendary bomb. Mm-hmm. And then gradually, like over the last 10 years, people have slowly come out in support of it. And I thought, well, maybe that's like nostalgia. They saw it as a kid or something. So I watched it 2 nights ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got some really funny bits in it because Elaine May is really funny. She also made I think The Heartbreak Kid and A New Leaf. Those are both really good movies.
The Animal Crossing games?
Yes. Okay. And it's got some really funny bits in it, but it has like 3 more script drafts and they would have killed it.
Mm.
But yeah, the budget got too ridiculous. Anytime you work with Warren Beatty, he's going to want to try to direct things and take over. That's sort of his deal.
He was trying to reward her for having written a bunch of fun movies with him and give her a big shot at directing. Mm. And they fought and it was awful. And they're filming in Morocco during political strife. There's things are breaking. There's no way to get them fixed because Morocco has no film community.
Yeah, and they're like the middle of the desert a bunch of the time. They got a lot of like the extras and there's helicopters and it's
I'm imagining a Radioactive Man situation where they're just getting fleeced by everybody.
Well, sort of, but I think
thanks for not wearing puffy directing pants.
I think I was just reading that the Moroccans were welcoming, but like just didn't have the resources to sustain a film production. Everything would have to be like shipped from the middle of the desert to a major city and then to New York to be fixed or get new stuff. It was very hard on everyone.
Yeah.
Waterworld's a good comparison. Yeah. It kind of took its place in the punchline zeitgeist because this movie didn't so much suck as its budget ballooned so big and became the subject of so much pre-release negative publicity. Yeah. Everybody assumed it was bad because it also failed.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't happen for another... Well, it would happen a couple times, but like the only other notable instance I can think of is about 10 years later with Titanic. And that was an instance where it was like, everyone said this was going to flop.
Everybody thought it was going to be the next Ishtar. They were using that in headlines as Titanic, the next Ishtar.
And even Waterworld, like I keep going back to bat for Waterworld.
It's so
because
fun.
It's such a fun movie and it made money.
It ended up getting its money back.
As much as this, the most expensive movie ever made and they're filming on water and the sets are flooding and blah, blah, blah. It's like, and it made almost twice as much money as it cost to make. Yeah. Like it was a hit.
But it was the most expensive movie ever made at the time of production. I think, even non-adjusted for inflation, this film cost $40 million and 87, and it made back 15.
Oof.
So that's a colossal bomb.
That's
adjusted for inflation, that budget for a lighthearted comedy is $100 million
in
just
McBain
production
in
budget.
Front of the brick wall for 90 minutes.
No, Evan Almighty, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it's got. I really. There are a couple really good especially, I like, there's a couple running gags. I mean, first of all, the casting. Dustin Hoffman is supposed to be, like, the macho one.
Whoa. Wow.
And Warren Beatty is, like, a dumb hick who keeps lamenting about, like, oh, no girl would find me attractive. I'm like, oh, that's adorable. and then they run into Isabella Gianni, one of the most beautiful women in the world. And they keep thinking she's a dude. It's like, stuff like that, that's fun. There's, I think, I tried to grab a clip of it, but it was just too damn long. There's a scene with Matt Frewer gets one scene. Actually, I spotted Dylan Baker as an extra in it, and I was like, wait, was that him? Roll back. Oh my God, Dylan Baker. Yeah, there's a scene with Matt Frewer as one of these spies. They're all infiltrating this market, and like, there's so many groups of spies, and each one's disguised as someone else. So it's like, those Moroccans over there, those are CIA. And those Americans over there, those are Turkish. Those Turkish guys, that's the KGB. Those Russian-looking dudes, those are tourists. And everyone's chasing everyone else and pretending like not to be chasing each other. It's like all that stuff. More of that, and you'd have a great movie.
I also have a clip from Ebert.
I'll introduce it better than I could.
Okay, now let's have a roll of the drums, please, but imaginary drums, because this movie isn't good enough for real drums. So I've saved the last spot on the program for the biggest bomb of 1987, or of almost any recent year. And you didn't think, did you, that we had forgotten Ishtar? No, you didn't think so. This was a $44 million comedy that hardly made enough money to pay for its advertising. But I wouldn't have even objected to the budget so much if this movie had contained at least a few forlorn, funny moments. But it did not. The movie starred Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman as a couple of untalented song and dance men who get a booking in North Africa and wind up singing to the camels.
My lips are on fire. With my desire for you. Good song.
Yeah, that was a big problem with it, is that they're supposed to be songwriters. Mm-hmm. And this, I mean, first of all, the songs that they are writing are very old-timey, and I was shocked to see in the credits that Paul Williams wrote the music for them, and Elaine May wrote the lyrics. I was expecting a big reaction from Chris for Paul Williams, because he'd love him.
Paul Williams.
Chris.
Emmett Otter. Composer.
Yeah.
Rainbow Connection composer.
So many good things. But it's just like, because they're supposed to be songwriters, but they're also performing, and it feels weird that they're as old as they are. Like, if they were 23, it would play better. And there's just so many scenes of them writing shitty songs. It's like, I get it. This song sucks. It takes them forever to get to, like, the meat of it. There's just so much time of them being shitty songwriters. And me feeling embarrassed for them instead of laughing.
I don't want to hear Warren Beatty sing. I want to hear him rap.
Exactly.
10 years, buddy.
Exactly.
Moving into TV this week.
Well, let's move on from a flop to, well, another flop.
Ooh.
Joan Rivers' final episode hosting Fox's The Late Show was on May 15th, 1987. Fox would continue to aim at the windmill that is late night talk shows for quite a while. So over the summer, they would have guest hosts including Richard Belzer, Suzanne Summers, and Robert Townsend. They would hire Arsenio Hall, and he would last a few months in the fall. And then they would hire some other guys. Then a few years later, Magic Johnson had a show.
Right.
Chevy Chase had a show.
So, those were all syndicated.
So they hired Arsenio, and he failed,
then came back with his own syndicated show.
Right, then came back with the syndicated show. One was huge.
Yeah. Wow.
For 5 years.
Yes.
Yes, but it was very important at the time.
It was. It truly was. But it's just odd that Fox is... Even ABC, which didn't have a late night property till Jimmy Kimmel, has finally succeeded in that regard, and Fox never has.
Nope.
Never.
I miss Joan, by the way.
A couple of finales to talk about. May 12th, 1987, is the series finale for Gimme a Break. No more breaks to give. Sorry.
No more breaks.
I don't know why I remember the title so much.
It's one of those shows where I don't know what it is based on the name.
It's a super generic sitcom, of which there were many, many, like Mr. Belvedere.
Yeah. I remember the
Here's
song.
A family and like a housekeeper or a crazy neighbor or a funny relative.
So it starred Nell Carter as the housekeeper for a widowed policeman and his family. Aired for 6 seasons. Had a lot of future stars on the cast, including Joey Lawrence.
He was a little kid.
Yeah, and Rosie O'Donnell. I think her first acting role after she like made it big on Star Search.
Future president Rosie O'Donnell?
Yes. She's no good on this show. I hate her. I included a theme which was sung by Nell Carter and is one of those earbugs that...
I love this.
Not bad, baby. Give me a break. Now I know what it takes. I'm putting a new face
on the old one. Ready for anything. Dolph Sweet.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's an actor's name? Playing with fate. Not a moment too late. Showing the whole world nothing can get me down. This is awesome. Why did the 80s have to
The show's
end?
Called Give Me a Break?
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, like, I just wish Adult Swim had kept... they were probably prohibitively expensive, but the greatest TV event in history.
Yeah, those are great.
Because they're all these sitcoms are so great. Like, I could watch hours of just sitcom intros. Because yeah. they change every year, too. Here's Nell Carter accidentally vacuuming the fish tank empty.
Yeah.
I just wrote that somewhere. I thought it was revelatory for me. 85% of the content for the 1980s will not hold up past the intro song. So just watch that, and if Adam Scott can keep making that again, that's the best way to relive
in
these
retrospect
things.
I probably wasted about 5 minutes doing this, but I went through every season of Give Me a Break. The song always stayed the same, but the credits were different, and in retrospect Brett's the only one who's seeing it right now. I guess when the episode goes up, everyone can see the one I chose, but I was like, nah, this one's not as good. Every single one has the exact same scene at the end, which is great, which is Nell Carter stepping on a scale and getting angry and picking up the scale like attempting to hurt it.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. She's about to smash it over her knee.
Yeah.
Right. Well, if you don't know, Nell Carter's kind of a large black woman.
Another finale this week was Dallas's season finale.
Ooh.
If you remember the last season finale, it's the infamous one with Bobby Ewing in the shower.
Oh.
The entire season is negated because he's not dead.
I was.
But in a twist of fate, on this season's finale, so Bobby Ewing returned at the beginning of the season. His wife, Pamela, who's the one who discovered him in the shower, she gets in a car accident and is horribly burned and is basically written off the show. She didn't die, but she just, like, left.
Mm.
But this is... I put a clip in here. It's the most season finaliest season finale scene ever. It's a little bit long, but it's so great because it's like everything's worked out great.
Everything looks fine. He thinks I can carry a baby to full term.
Oh no.
She's so optimistic about it.
Oh, honey, that's wonderful.
Ask Christopher.
He's great. We spent the whole day together.
You know, Bobby, we both better start spending more time with him, especially now.
Also, real quick, she's on a cell phone in the 80s.
It's a car phone, I think.
A car phone.
Yeah, I was going to say, either it's a brick
still,
or it's
I mean,
a car
they
phone.
Got that. They got that oil money.
Still, yeah. Exorbitantly expensive.
Pam, he's going to be fine. Now, you hurry up and get home. If we're going to have another baby, we got some work to do.
Well, if that's the case, I'll be home in 10 minutes. Bye.
I'm going to run this red light.
Big tanker, right in her path.
Wow.
It's still going?
Yeah.
It is a full screen.
Do we need to put this up on our Facebook?
Full screen explosion, executive producer Leonard Katzman. Like, it is over.
I love
this because Chris and I can't see it. We just see Brett's face has lit up.
Yeah.
You are the happiest little boy in the world.
It's a exploding gas truck and then just like smash cut credits. The show is over. This main character is dead. Then they never met again.
And I mean, I just love, like, this is such an 80s thing. And, like, I guess Sleepaway Camp is the other major example I can think of where it's like, how can you convey that things are just, like, tits up? Mm. Just, like, bleh! Like, one horn blowing at full force.
Yeah.
No actual, like, musical.
No, just
like,
noise.
Yeah, just. When I die, I want that to play.
I think I need that music. I think we need to just add it to everything where it's like, hey, what do you want for dinner? I was thinking we'd get burritos.
And this shouldn't get lost in all of this. She died. Well, she didn't die, but she got in a horrible car accident because she wanted to rush home to get that D.
Pulled out in front of an exploding truck.
And they were pretty graphic about it. Like,
and
you
then,
better get home so I can fuck you.
And then I'm sure as the car is exploding, she's like, give me a break. That's a joke, but I'll move on.
I liked it.
Let's move on to some slightly calmer fare.
Uh-huh.
May 16th, 1987. The Golden Girls aired a backdoor pilot for Empty Nest. Sorry, I don't have any clips of it, but like Empty Nest is one of those shows where when I hear the name Empty Nest and my eyes just glaze over. Yep. Thanks to you, I have a renewed interest in watching The Golden Girls, but yes.
It's
Empty
really good.
Nest, like with that giant guy who looks like a bird. I forget his name.
Richard Mulligan.
Yeah. I'm just like...
he looks like a bird.
He
like
does.
Bird?
He looks like a...
He was in tons... Like, he's a character actor go way back.
He's like the human personification of that eagle from The Muppets.
Sam the Eagle.
He kind of does look like that. He doesn't have quite
Yes,
the voice,
he does.
He does
Holy
look
shit.
Like that. But yeah, I mean, it was him. He was what, a doctor, a pediatrician.
He's like an ace doctor that everybody loves.
But he lives like next door to the Golden Girls, I think. Is
yeah,
the
they live very close.
And he's
no, they just live in a house. They share a house. But I remember his nurse's park overall. Sassy. Yeah, I know she's got a funny name, but
she's the sassy
Southern voice you've heard a ton of times, like on The Critic. She's second season brought in on The Critic.
Oh. Love interest?
Yeah, that's her. And the other guy that was notable was the neighbor, the smarmy neighbor.
Yes,
was Joe Isuzu.
Yeah, he's an airline pilot that just like drifts in and cracks a beer. Like, what are you guys talking about? Like, Chris, please leave.
People knew him because he was part of this ad campaign for Isuzu, where he was like, "I'm Joe Isuzu. This is my company." And he just lied and lied, and like the joke was, "Haha, he's an asshole, but our cars are great."
But like, so Golden Girls, we've been rewatching it all because it all came on Hulu, and the show is 95% still awesome.
So good.
And the episode is even called Empty Nests, and the show is just slam on the brakes with the Golden Girls, and you spend so much time with these other cast members, and the wife is just like, "I'm lonely and bored. Husband, please abandon your practice so we can spend more time together." And it's like, this plight needs a little bit more to it, because like, you don't have to sit in the house alone all day. Like, do you have interests? You could get your own job. Like, and they barely touch on any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But then the husband is also just like, "What are you talking about? We got no problem." It's like, both of you are so unlikable and unrelatable. And then they just end up getting back together because like, she goes to New York, and then that makes like, with their daughter who got dumped.
Right.
So she goes.
Well, that's the ends up being the setup. The premise of the show is that their adult daughters move back in.
Yeah.
Like at a time when they should be empty nesters and having fun and retiring soon. Instead, oh, they're pain in the ass. Older daughters are moving
back. Hot retirement sex.
But this last scene of them laying in bed realizing that they're going to stay together is so weird. And that this is how the show ends. No Golden Girls tag at all. This is sped up, but just the dialogue here.
"Because I won't always look like this, you know."
"Honey, you don't look like you did 10 years ago, but that hasn't mattered."
"George, promise me you'll never get your teeth bonded and run around with stewardesses."
"I promise."
"You swear?"
"I swear."
They kiss. They go, turn off the light, total darkness.
"I love you."
"I love you too, sweetheart."
"George."
"Hmm?"
"Promise me one more thing."
"What?"
"Promise me you'll never die."
And then the fucking audience claps. And then it's over. And
here's
it's like
immortality.
"Promise me you'll never die." "Sure thing, sweetheart. I'm on it." Like, what? Yeah.
So, Empty Nest went on to air for 7 seasons.
7!
That
sucks. Seasons! I cannot believe there are people this wealthy off of something no one wants anything to do with.
God. I'm so glad. I was dreading this crossover episode all season.
The Simpsons family, like the Simpsons spinoff showcase episode, that is what every spinoff is. Like all those backdoor pilots where it's like, you just interrupted my show.
Yeah.
You put the Golden Girls in here for, what, 2 or 3 minutes of 20 minutes? No, I want to see the people that are on the show.
One of the scenes is literally them in their house, the Empty Nest house.
Yeah.
And then Dorothy comes in through the kitchen door and is like, "Oh, hi. You want to come to dinner? Sorry, Dorothy, I can't." "Okay, well, thanks. Bye."
Yeah.
And it's like, wait. You drove over here to ask this question, and then you're just going to leave? You could have called. You have telephone. It's just such
You're
a weird...
"You're having a dinner party I don't get to see?"
Yeah, exactly.
Stella Getty just walks in. "I can't wait to hear about all of your adventures."
Tell me more.
This was the season finale, you said.
I don't know if it was.
It
was? For season 2, yeah.
Ugh.
Oh, man. So I'm expecting like a good episode with something fun happening.
Nope.
Boo.
Another classic show returned on May 17th, 1987 in movie form. The Return of the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman aired on NBC. This was 9 years after $6 Million Man concluded. This was the first of three TV movies that were really spaced out. So this one aired in 87. They would air another $6 Million Man movie in 1989 and then another one in 1994.
For inflation, this seemed like a $10 million.
Yeah, and I included a clip of the trailer.
Lee Majors and Lindsay Wagner are back in an all-new bionic movie.
Yes, the noise.
Their most incredible powers yet, they've come out of retirement to take on international terrorists.
There's been a series of sabotage rings.
Joined by a son with a blinding force.
Just a microchip off the old one.
Nothing can stop them.
Unless you stand too close to a microwave.
Together, the adventure explodes in the Return of the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman. Next.
Oh, so close.
But and a son who has Cyclops powers, but we're gonna punt on this one and not elaborate.
Did they not give him a name? Like, you got the $6 million man, the Bionic Woman. What about, like,
here's old Laserface.
Yeah. The $50,000 boy.
Cybernetic Tyler.
And last but definitely not least, May 18th, 1987, ABC aired the special 100 Years of Hollywood.
Oh, no.
This was a special celebrating 100 years of Hollywood.
Why oh no, Diana?
And
because these are, I mean, all right,
first of all. Did Hollywood do stuff in 1887?
First of all, they are wrong. It's not Hollywood. You could argue 100 years of film.
Sure.
I mean, if you want to be like, hey, everyone, remember the Lumiere brothers? Yeah, here's some workers leaving a plant.
Remember when that train made everyone leap out of their seats in the theater?
You remember when there was 3 years when all movies were watching one guy work out for 4 minutes?
Oh my! No, Hollywood didn't become Hollywood until like the 20s.
Yeah.
All right. No, the center of American filmmaking before Hollywood was New Jersey.
Yeah. This is, I think, like literally like the land that was developed for Hollywood broke ground in 1887.
Yeah. Right, but it seriously had like 3,000 residents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But man, like,
you have a theme song here.
So Liza Minnelli sings an ode to Hollywood, and people say like the Oscars is a Hollywood wank fest. No, this is a Hollywood wank fest because it is just talking about how great Hollywood is.
It's only been 100 years,
Buster.
But picture life without it.
Oh, delightfully grand.
Without the movies, without TV, without Gable Street and Hepburn. Julie Andrews and E.T.
All right.
Julie Andrews to E.T.
This sounds stupid.
It is just like a procession of like, yeah. There's like, the next. It's like the next thing on that is like a skit with like Tom Bosley, I think, and hey, this is how Hollywood was formed. We're doing a little sketch about it.
I might have to watch all of this.
Yeah. That seemed terribly revisitable.
Yeah. This is always death.
A big part of it is because like the 80s was sort of kind of the first wave of the big Hollywood stars started dying in the late 70s and into the 80s. So some of them were still around.
Including Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart made it into late 90s. Yeah, he almost made it to 2000.
And this is like the clip when people make fun of Jimmy Stewart's voice, like this is the era of like Jimmy Stewart that they're imitating. Like,
yeah,
oh, I wasn't around all the
way. He talked like an old man in his 20s.
Hi,
but he's got like the big glasses and like the white hair,
Jiminy Glick glasses.
Yes. Well, that's it for TV this week.
Video games. Man. Sometime in May 1987, Burger Time comes to the NES, an adaptation of the arcade game, where you play as Pita Pepper, a chef who must avoid the enemies Mr. Hot Dog, Mr. Pickle, and Mr. Egg, as he makes giant burgers by walking over ingredients suspended in platforms.
This is one of the first games I've played. That visually captured my attention as a little kid, like, immediately. Yeah. I didn't love the game, but it was a good gateway.
I don't even like burgers, but I like this game.
I think I played obviously you played an arcade when it's like, I have like, especially in the early 90s when so many games started to get up to 50 cents per play.
Ooh.
Especially a lot of fighting games and the big, like, I mean, Virtua Fighter, and because some of the Capcom stuff, and like Cruisin' USA was $1 to play each time in 1994, which is insane. Burger Time and all those old games were still $0.25, so you're like, all right, well, I'm down to my last 50 cents, and I'm just going to get my ass kicked in Killer Instinct again, so I'll play Burger Time and In the Hunt. Why not?
It had a re-release or something on Xbox Live Arcade a couple years ago where it was like 3D.
Yeah.
The platform rotates.
Yikes.
New albums this week. Music taking us out of 87. Girls by Motley Crue.
Yeah.
Jane's Addiction self-titled album debuts.
The official theme song of my future daughter.
Music for a pole.
Jane's Addiction self-titled album debut by Jane's Addiction and Richard Marx. But number one this week is With or Without You by U2.
Yay!
Perfectly great song. So we'll go out with this jam. We'll be back the same week, 1997.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. Wait, the one last thing I did, it was really dumb. I've left the house a mess. My girlfriend's done all the cooking and grocery shopping. She bought me a record player for Christmas, and right we plugged in, the fucking amp receiver blew. I may not be able to handle the cooking. I'll find a fucking receiver. Went to Best Buy to buy her La La Land, and then I walked by the open box section. I'm like, oh god, I've been researching receivers for like 2 weeks. That's open box. These things run like $350, $450. That's $130. And I'm looking around like someone's gonna steal this from me. Like I gotta get this open box item. What, sir? What's wrong with this? What happened? He's like, and that's what I was like. I'm like, what's wrong with this? How could this be $130? And he's like,
Someone scratched a swastika into the top of it.
I wish he would have told me, because I still have no idea. I'm like, well, fuck that shit. And I'm like fucking proud of myself doing victory laps. $130, I saved $300. Man, this thing hurts to hold. Oh my fuck, I'm on a bike. I'm on a bike holding a brand new expensive receiver that's heavy as shit, with like its motherboard soldering is poking through the bottom and like hurts to hold. And I'm like, I'm on a bike. What the fuck am I supposed to do? Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
Jesus, and I close my eyes, and I thank God for all of the joy in my life. Oh, but most of all, for butterfly kisses after bedtime prayer.
That is Bob Carlyle.
What?
Butterfly Kisses.
That's the country version. I think the less country version might have stripped some of Jesus out. But crossover hit. I used to hear this. I was in college at this point, and I'd hear this. I'm like, what the living fuck is this?
Yeah. To me, as a devout Christian, the mark of any good song is one that stretches out Jesus' name to like 16 syllables.
Yeah.
Jesus!
Oh, it's creepy. It's about a dad like tucking his little daughter in and giving her butterfly kisses, which is when you like rub your eyelashes on somebody.
Creepy.
Yeah. The best way to transmit pink eye.
Exactly.
Yeah. This ties in nicely to Girls, Girls, Girls.
But also this week...
There are no butterfly kisses in the champagne room.
The Misfits' American Psycho, Leanne Womack's self-titled debut album, and Modest Mouse's The Fruit That Ate Itself. Hypnotized by Biggie, still number one. News this week, 1997, The Perfect Storm by Sebastian Junger is published.
Yep.
Mark Wahlberg.
That would be to have the movie on in 2000, I think.
About then. But yeah, this was a bestseller for a jillion years. So I should throw it in there.
Movies this week. Fifth Element is number one at the box office. We talked about that quite a lot last week. Great movie, super fun, beautiful.
Multipass.
New this week, Funny Games.
I've never seen this version.
The first version.
It's one of the weird foreign remakes that is remade by the same director and writer.
There's someone here.
Hello.
Sorry to disturb you. I'm staying next door.
Please, come in.
Wow, that's a really great set of clubs.
Mr. Farber.
What?
Dad! This is a really transfixing film.
Now, look, I had to grab clips from the second version that came out we'll end up talking about it in the 2007 segment, but because the original is in German. But looking at both trailers, the trailers are identical. Yep. Wow. It's just shot for shot.
Yeah,
but
both Michael Haneke remaking his own film from his own script.
Yeah, just, I mean, it's in German. I'm not going to post a bunch of German. Sorry, German listeners.
Not a good family crowd pleaser. It's just about a bunch of, like, just blindingly white teens who terrorize a family for no reason.
So this is like the Naked Lunch level where... This is neither funny nor are there games.
I imagine a lot of people got burned on this blockbuster purchase.
I can think of two things
in Germany.
With that title.
Well, there are games. They're just not funny.
Yeah.
They're very sadistic.
Pretty sadistic, and horrifying.
Nihilistic, even. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then also this week, Night Falls on Manhattan.
What?
Andy Garcia, Ian Holm, James Gandolfini.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Early James Gandolfini.
Hey, look at me.
Put this little trailer clip here.
His films have shaped the way America sees its justice system. Serpico, Guilty as Sin, The Verdict, Power, Q&A, Network.
Jesus.
The legendary filmmaker whose vision has inspired a generation, Sidney Lumet.
I've never seen a trailer try to sell the director
so hard.
Instead of telling you what the movie's about, which is actually quite interesting.
Is that the way you say his name? I thought it was Lumet.
No, I think it's Lumet.
Oh.
We're in America. We pronounce consonants.
Okay.
Yeah. Come on. He's a New York Jewish guy. It's probably Lumet.
Lumet. I don't know anything about this. Never saw it.
It got decent reviews, but it's one of those sort of like fell off the radar that it's about like police corruption and the DA's in on it and Richard Dreyfuss is kind of a sleazy defense attorney who's kind of Alan Dershowitz-y.
It's no Q&A. What?
Q&A. Yeah. Well,
that barrage of movies that I've never seen. Is
Power.
Yeah. I've seen a bunch of them, but Q&A, no.
Yeah, I've seen Q&A. It's not really worth watching. Unless you want to see Nick Nolte with a transsexual guy, I think?
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
Do I?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Network, Dog Day Afternoon, Serpico. These are all awesome movies that you should probably watch before you get to... get to Night Falls on Manhattan. I'm sorry.
But yeah, pretty quiet week for movies.
Andy Garcia trying to open a movie. Good for him.
I'm just fascinated by seeing this is pre-Sopranos.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
James Gandolfini.
Yep. Yeah. Oddly enough, playing a lot of this very similar roles.
I imagine.
Almost always.
We're pre-Get Shorty?
That was 95, I think.
Oh, okay, so we're post-Get Shorty.
Mm-hmm.
So he's already kind of the Gandolfini we know. I've seen a couple of things where he's like a non-speaking extra in the early 90s where he was skinny.
Whoa.
And had
hair?
Yeah, he was skinny and had a ponytail, and it's like, that is not...
Oh, look at me, you can barely hear me breathing over here.
That's him! Oh my God!
My breathing's barely labored.
Oh.
I'm not going to eat all this gobble-goo in one sitting. Take some home!
since we're light on movies, I will say a year ago in our 86, 96, 06 portion of 302010, May 86 was Top Gun, and May 96 was Twister, both of which movies I love and we have commentaries for on our Bandcamp and our Patreon.
Patreon.com.
I feel like it goes back and forth where they decide summer starts in May.
Yeah.
And then... a couple of years go by and May sucks, like no one makes any money, and they decide summer starts in June.
Yeah, it's
and then they go back to it.
May. Mm. Oh, the big one for May, it's coming up, is Lost World.
Yep.
But yeah, I guess they tried to. I guess Fifth Element and Lost World were the big May movies. Everything else is Butterfly Kisses, and that's a song. Whoops. TV this week.
Well, let's keep the movie train rolling with some TV movies and miniseries. Ooh. The Odyssey miniseries aired with Armand Desante. I don't know much about this.
I just remember seeing ads for it and being like, and being like, oh, that's a property you don't have to license. Good for you.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure ancient Greek literature is rights free. It's public domain.
Oh, yeah. Socrates' estate is such a dick.
That would be amazing if there was still someone defending those rights. The great, great 18th great grandnephew of Socrates or somebody.
And since The Sopranos is still a few years off for HBO, they're still trying to find their way with original programming, like TV movies, like Weapons of Mass Destruction.
Totally saw this.
With Gabriel Byrne and Ben Kingsley playing rival, like, media moguls that are just going after each other.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It's like War of the Roses for white people.
Yeah.
Sorry, white executives.
And I don't think... Are you supposed to root for either of them? I can't tell in the trailer.
No, well, that's kind of the thing. They both destroy one another through... they trade back and forth high-level executive CEO pranks. I think. It's been a while.
Yeah, I have the trailer if you want to... It's just the end where they call out the names, but...
From Larry Gelbart, the creator of MASH and Barbarians at the Gate. Gabriel Byrne. Ben Kingsley. Weapons of Mass Destruction. A comedy where only the strong survive.
Ta-da. With Jeffrey Tambor.
Yeah.
Eliana Douglas.
Who looks just like Hey Now.
Hey Now, Hank Kingsley.
Hank Kingsley.
Not to be confused with Ben Kingsley.
I'm kind of impressed that it uses the title Weapons of... Playing on Weapons of Mass Destruction when it's like, we didn't... Yeah. That's a phrase you heard a lot circa like 2003.
Yeah.
Robin Williams would steal for a special.
That's true.
Later on in HBO.
Mm-hmm. Collusion.
A bunch of finales to talk about. Let's start with some series finales. May 14th, 1997 is the series finale for Coach, which I watched a bit of.
I watched pretty regularly.
Yeah, I mean, it had a really good cast. Craig T. Yeah. Nelson, always dependable. The guy, Bill Fabergacki, I always feel like I get his name wrong. Patrick Starr. And Jerry Van Dyke.
Jerry Van Dyke was great.
Oh, I love him. He's such a such a good comedic force on that show. And all I remember is that at this point, I think like Coach started with Coach coaching a high school team, and at the end of the show, he's coaching like the top college team to the national championship.
He's so still living in the same house,
and I think he's like being recruited for like the Minnesota Vikings or something. Mm-hmm. But he still got a daughter and a wife who won't stop nagging him. He just should be coaching. Okay. another series finale. Can't believe its run is over. Homeboys in Outer Space.
No.
Run. I don't know if I included the theme when we talked about it probably like 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm. We did. I definitely remember playing this.
Love
before.
Hearing it again. It's been their dream to run a starship as a team. When everything was going cool, till a minor mishap in flight school. The body ship was very fun, and now they're having fun. As homeboys in outer space.
Taken too soon. It really sucked, though, when the satellite crashed into a truck, and they exploded, and they all died.
Wow, those sounds so well put together.
It's the new dramatic chipmunk.
Oh, wonderful. The second or third laser time we ever did was about story TV show theme songs that are just high concept enough. Someone has to sing you the premise every single time.
Yeah.
Here's what they are. Here's how they got here.
This
and the minnow
the
would
story
be lost.
Of...
Wow. Yes. That Mystery Science Theater.
Diary
I love it.
Of Desmond Pfeiffer.
So this was like a...
The Big Bad Beetleborg song has to explain
this
itself.
This was like WB, like, first season.
One of the first shows. Yeah, I am constantly amazed at the things that my husband Michael remembers. When I told him about what was coming up on this episode, first of all, he had seen Ishtar. He remembered the entire lyrics of one of their shitty songs.
Wow.
I could not fucking believe it. And then... He remembered enough about Homeboys and from Outer Space, either from an ad or from actually seeing it, about an episode where they go to the planet Caucasia, where all the white people are really snooty. I'm afraid of the things he remembers.
You don't have to travel far for that.
One of the only things I remember Tracy Lords from is her appearance on Homeboys in Outer Space.
Wow. And, not Cry Baby?
No idea why. No.
The gone. Star of the Mortal Kombat song?
Are you sure it wasn't Homeboys in Tracy Lords? That's another great movie that she was in. Now let's move on to some season finales. ER had its season 3 finale this week, where Dr. Ross and Nurse Hathaway finally get together. This is George Clooney and Juliana Margulies?
Yes.
Yeah,
finally. She's been pining after him since like the pilot where she was supposed to die, but they liked her so much they kept her alive. And and he's George Clooney in his kind of his breakout role, honestly.
I gotta imagine
his worst haircut.
And I gotta imagine he's got his foot out the door already. Like
he sticks around for a
100
while.
Episodes.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, he even when he started doing movies, he stuck around for a while, because I mean none of the movies were doing very well, including Batman and Robin. we'll get to.
Oh, July, but, baby. June or July.
Man, the first couple seasons of ER, I still don't... Why is this not syndicated? It's a great show. It was massively popular.
Yeah.
Incredible cast that did great work. especially in the early seasons before it got too crazy.
Speaking of George Clooney, we just talked about the season 2 finale of Golden Girls. George Clooney just showed up in an episode of Golden Girls where he's a cop that ends up getting shot at the end.
Oh my god.
But he survives, but it's just like this old guy that they're all horned up and trying to get on.
Oh, yeah.
But George Clooney is so young, they treat him like, you remind me of my son. And he's like the baby of the room, and he's like, I'm a grown man. And it's just so weird to see that young of a George Clooney with no fanfare around him at all.
No, he was just a jobbing actor. He popped up on every sitcom for like one or two episodes. Mm-hmm. It took him, at least 10 years to finally get a role. Everyone went, oh!
Three Kings, baby. Shit. That's
And then Three Kings.
Really good.
Same night as the ER season 3 finale was the Seinfeld, I believe season 8 finale.
Sure.
Summer of George, which is George takes the summer off when he gets laid off and has a severance pay. But it's more notable to me, at least, in the fact that Molly Shannon, who was like just breaking out on SNL, she guest stars as a co-worker of Elaine who doesn't move her arms when she walks. Elaine makes fun of her. Molly Shannon finds out, and she threatens to beat up Elaine, which brings up this is not like one of the most notable scenes, but for me, it's one of my favorite Seinfeld scenes, which is Kramer's obsession with catfights.
Oh, right. Yeah. This is one where Cal Welch
did. Did you tell Peterman about this?
Well, I tried, but he thought it was some sort of a catfight.
Catfight?
Okay, why? Why do guys do this? What is so appealing to men about a catfight?
Yeah, catfight. Because men think if women are grabbing and clawing at each other, there's a chance they might somehow kiss.
She just like throws her head at the table.
And I have to believe that is like she is seconds away from corpsing, so she just puts her head down.
Yeah.
If you Google the name of the episode, the image that comes up is just Kramer spectating, waiting to spectate a cat fight.
Oh, yeah. And like, so that's also Kramer's storyline is that he's a seat filler, I think, at an award ceremony, goes on stage, gets an award, and I think it's supposed to give it to Raquel Welch or something, and that's how she gets into a fight.
Yeah. And then that's actually kind of making fun of the, like, she's known as being difficult, and she was on stage, I think, in Victor Victoria, and had troubles with the producers and whatever, and so she's sort of satirizing that reputation, and that, you know, this, like, we have to fire her because when she dances, she doesn't move her arms. And then it all comes back around.
The X-Files season X-Files season 4 finale was also this week. I'm not even going to say the name. It's,
Gethsemane.
I've been tongue-tied already. What?
Gethsemane?
Gethsemane.
Gethsemane.
Gethsemane?
Why am I always the Jew who knows the Christian things?
Because I was brought up in a household with nothing.
I've watched the entire run of the X-Files, and I don't know anything about this season finale, and it sounds like, hey, you guys make fun of Lost for bait and switch. Play the clip that promoted this episode and tell me that that this isn't
The wait is over. The X-Files' biggest discovery.
We have an extraterrestrial entity.
Will turn Scully against Mulder.
I am here to expose his belief in the biggest of lies.
But the truth.
Stop! Federal agent!
Will cost one of them their life. The X-Files shocking season finale.
So
it will cost Mulder or Scully their life.
Mm-hmm. So it's this is a in kayfabe thing. As the viewer, you are also, because those two together are running a big con to try to out a bunch of government people. So they need to think Mulder's dead, and they need to think a bunch of this other stuff has gone down to expose who gave Scully cancer. So like, it's on purpose to like get you to watch, to be like, because here's the difference. It pays off, right? It doesn't drag its ass for 5 seasons with no answers and just pile mystery on mystery. It does pile
what
mystery.
What happened with Mulder's sister?
It does pile, and that's like, it's weird because that's like the MacGuffin, right? This is why he's into what he's doing, and then they like change that shit all the time. But it's still like, it didn't pin its hopes on one thing, whereas Lost just kept becoming like, this secret of the island or this big purpose, and like, I promise it's not purgatory or whatever. And it's like,
it wasn't.
Anyway, but this is like season 4, and it just ends with like, Mulder is led to believe that all the alien stuff is just is fake. And it's a military cover up. It's a story perpetuated by the government to distract people of what all that technology and all this stuff is really, which is just, of course, a bunch of people trying to get rich and make weapons and be political and rule the world. And he realizes, like, shit, has my whole life been a joke? And he, Scully then says, like, yeah, he killed himself. He committed suicide because his life's work and his dream and his passion was a fraud, and he couldn't take it. And then she's also testifying in front of everyone, and her nose drips blood, and she passes out because she's got cancer. It's not a great episode, and neither is season 5 premiere, but, like, this is when X-Files goes from, like, a pretty popular show to this is one of the most popular. 20-something million people watch this thing.
20 million people watching this episode.
And this is the next season's finale. Season 5 is, like, the Two Fathers, One Son, which is, like, the biggest cliffhanger for the show ever. Leads to the movie of 98. Like, this show gets even bigger than it is right now, and it all comes from this, where they are at least addressing ongoing things, and even though for every one question they answer they add two more, it's still like, okay, they're at least, the story's moving forward, and the degree of the conspiracy is being revealed of how deep it goes. And it'd be alien bounty hunters. We did a whole X-Files laser time, so
You see, they're hinting at some, they're hinting at what might be going on with that title. Can't believe you guys don't. Gethsemane is the garden where Judas kisses Jesus and betrays him.
Two men kiss in the Bible?
Yes.
Not in my Bible.
I have a clip.
They kiss so
hard. Still
didn't see it coming. They kiss so hard they both exploded.
So they're hinting that Scully or Mulder will betray each other.
Yeah, the idea is that Scully is going to betray Mulder and say, like, oh yeah, he's a farce and everything he believed in was fake. But it's to try to get some of these government people who have been hiding things to crack and be like, sweet, Mulder's dead, time to party, and then they can track him. And if everyone thinks Mulder, and it's season 5, it ends with him, like, kind of teaming up with cigarette smoking man, which is like one of those, like, face turns you really want. Like, I want the cigarette smoking man to ride in a motorcycle with Mulder. Anyway,
and yes, Diane, I guess a couple of theologian TV Guide subscribers were very happy with this reference.
Yeah, sure. It's a well-known story. There's an entire religion built on it, for fuck's sake.
All I know is Jesus hated gays and poor people.
And the biggest TV event of the week, the man who would 20 years later be our president, Donald Trump, guest starred on The Drew Carey Show.
Man, he's been guest starring everywhere.
Yeah, I'm telling you, his publicist
he's got to be promoting
his
something.
His publicist was working overtime. They're stuck in traffic in New York. They're driving an ice cream truck.
Wow, hot one, isn't it? Let me have a nutty buddy.
Oh, my God. You're Donald Trump. Look at this right here on the street. It's Donald Trump.
Kind of weird, isn't it? Sort of like I'm human. Let me have a nutty buddy, please. Oh, we don't have any ice cream. Isn't this an ice cream truck?
Uh-huh.
So what's in the back of your truck?
Beer.
Beer in the back of an ice cream truck? What are you, morons?
No, we're from Cleveland.
Ah, you're from Cleveland. Okay, look, we just drove to New York on a kick to see the Indians play the Yankees. Now we're stuck here, okay? Well, I'm sorry to hear that. That I am sorry about. But you know what you do? Give this to the guy at the gate. He'll take you to my box seats. Use them, enjoy them, and welcome to New York.
Wow.
Wow. Thanks, Mr. Trump.
I'm going to go see the Star Wars trilogy. You'll probably still be here. We'll have a beer later. Okay.
Wow. What the Donald Trump said Star Wars?
I'm gonna the go Star see, Wars trilogy.
Well, by now...
the prequel trilogy.
Tremendous, tremendous movie. I love the one with the alien.
They're all three probably out of theaters by now, sir.
I legitimately miss now Donald Trump being a joke that was funny.
Mm. And both this week and the previous week's cameos and a couple others that I read about, like, I feel like what's written into his contract for every guest appearance is that he has to be like Poochie. Like, wow, Donald Trump, you're the best. Whoa. Oh, I can't believe. Thank you, Donald Trump. You did this for us.
And
thank you. You're
the
best.
Constantly remind the viewer that he's rich and has access to all kinds of crazy stuff.
He's so giving. He's really known for giving. I mean, the amount he gives to charity, we've all seen the form.
That's it for TV this week.
Games, it looks like the only big thing out this week is Wing Commander 4, The Price of Freedom, which I would repeatedly misread as The Prince of Freedom. But it's just, I loved Wing Commander 1 and 2. I played a lot of them, but when it went live action with Mark Hamill, and I think Malcolm McDowell's in 4, John Rhys Davies, like, when they changed to live action stuff, like, obviously my computer couldn't run it, and I was... So, like, I just never played 3 or 4 at all, but, like, you know, it's versus humans versus the Kilrathi, which are tiger
cat-looking aliens. If you watched the hit 2001 film, you saw what is probably the worst iteration of the Kilrathi you could even imagine. Worse than any video game.
But, it's a video game movie I forget exists.
It's really bad.
Lots of bullet time, though. Real Remember that. Bad.
And like, it's one of those movies where it's like, this story, like, you could make a Mass Effect level very serious, very good TV show or movie about Wing Commander. There's a lot going on, and they fleshed out the universe pretty well. But instead, they made a movie with Matthew Lillard, and it's like, what? Who is this
Freddie
for?
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah, it's like, who? Anyway, that movie sucks. But yeah, it's, you know, space dogfights. You get in a bunch of spaceships, and then you have this political intrigue and us versus them, and it's war in space, and that's really it. But it's fun. I never played 4, so I can't vouch for how good this one was. But Wing Commander is a series, pretty cool, and I wish it had another day in the sun. We'll head out of 97 with the Drew Carey theme.
I love that theme song.
It's Yay. It's a picker-upper.
Which one, though? There are three.
Oddly enough, the Presidents of the United States of America.
No! And we come back this same week, 2007.
Ohio.
Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth watching. May 12th to May 18th. 75 years ago, 1942, there's a couple of okay movies in This Our Life, directed by John Huston with Betty Davis and Olivia de Havilland. Apparently, and I haven't seen it, it's sort of like it's a women's picture about women and their conflicts, but John Huston and Olivia de Havilland were having an affair at the time, and he kept giving her all the glamour close-ups, and Betty got pissed. And when Betty get pissed, people get hurt. Also, This Gun for Hire, which is a pretty good Alan Ladd, Veronica Lake detective noir kind of movie. Yeah, I really like that one. But the big thing is 50 years ago this week in 1967 was when music gods roamed the earth and us mere mortals didn't deserve it. Because within a couple days of each other, May 17th, 1967, we had the premiere here in the lovely city of San Francisco of D.A. Pennebaker's seminal music documentary, Don't Look Back, about Bob Dylan, following Bob Dylan around on his tour of England. It is crazy. I watched most of it like years ago, and I watched a bunch of it last night. And it is so weird how it's about really like the relationship between fame and the press and how you deal with it. The press's reaction to freaking Bob Dylan is so strange and foreign to us now. We just think, oh, what, like folk singer, whatever, and they're like asking him these weird questions, and you know, there's like teenage girls that just think he's super dreamy, and just watching Dylan in his element at the time, like if you told me he's on the autism spectrum, I would believe it. Like, it's just strange how everything works out, and just in a post-rock and world how anyone was treating just stupid folk music as being like this shocking thing. It's just so strange. Really, really good. Very often parodied. Total recommend. And it's short. That same week, also over in England, May 12th, 1967, Jimi Hendrix's first album drops, Are You Experienced? Holy shit. These two go together so great, because on the one hand, you can see Dylan, he seems non-threatening, but he's talking about interesting stuff, you know? And if you don't dig Dylan, I understand why. Just read his lyrics. There's a reason he won the Nobel Prize for Literature. It's in the lyrics, man. And then on the other side, you got Hendrix, who's just creating an entire new genre. It's psychedelic. It's the beginning of metal. It's so great. So please go get big old headphones and put some pillows on the floor and lay down and just listen to Are You Experienced. Opens with Foxy Lady. Manic Depression is next. Just so great. I love it so much. Anyway, that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Things move in place.
This is These Things Move in Threes by Mumra.
Thundercats
reference? Thundercats villain Mumra. So this song came out, this album came out 10 years ago in like a week from now. However, for a reason I'll mention at the end of the show, I wanted to put it in here at now because I think this did leak a little early, and this song, or at least portions of the album, ended up online earlier than they would have intended this week 10 years ago in 2007. Mumra is an English band, but I only know this song because of, if you know the magazine NME, they would have, like, these are the hot bands of the year, and these are the bands guaranteed to, like, do big shit this year. I got one of those CDs from one of our former bosses back at Future in the Games Radar days, and it had, like, 10 songs or whatever from all kinds of different artists, like, I think Velvet Bells or something like that, and Get Cape, Wear Cape, Fly, and a bunch of weird bands I never really heard from again, but this Mumra song, These Things Move in Threes, like, I listened to this over and over, like, put it on my iPod at the time, and never heard another song from Mumra, but, like, I don't know, this is just one of those songs that immediately transports me back to a, it feels weird as 30-something to have nostalgia for, like, a 2007 thing, because you're already, like, 27 at that point, for me at least, but, like, yeah, like, anything over 25 feels weird to look back on as, like, oh, that was the day.
Yeah, but as you get older, that's, like, 2007 feels like 2 years ago, not 10. So it's, like, not even nostalgia. It's like, oh, remember that new song?
Yeah, but now it's like,
wait, what happened?
I'm, like, 10 years removed from it, and so much has happened in that 10 years. Like, jobs and travel and lifestyle, like, so much has changed that when I hear this, I'm like, wow, holy crap, what I was doing and what I was like and what I did.
My hangovers didn't last all day.
Yeah. but that's. I encourage you to check out the rest of the song. Mumra, These Things Move in Threes. I think it's really fun. But also, Maroon 5, Make Me Wonder, Makes Me Wonder is number one this week. We also have new releases from Rufus Wainwright, Release the Stars, and Linkin Park's Minutes to Midnight, and Wilco's Sky Blue Sky. Man, which Linkin Park Minutes to Midnight? What was the song on that?
I'm imagining
none of them jumped out at me immediately.
Screaming in my room.
Yeah, Chester also not. That's not my
Chester
thing.
Is yelling, and the rapper is calming him down.
Yeah, well, oh, okay. Bleed It Out was the main song, and Shadow of the Day was. I like that one a lot.
It's
but
all been like a foreign language to me.
Shadow of the Day is definitely them trying to do like a.
Cause I'm bleeding out.
You'll know Bleed It Out.
Stop
if you're
bleeding
out of my skin.
If you heard Bleed It Out,
I got
you'd
a Band-Aid.
Go like,
don't worry, I'll cover it up.
this is when I was out of Linkin Park, but I remember Shadow of the Day was it was their attempt to do like, it's not on the level of Good Riddance, maybe more like Filter's Take a Picture, them doing a slower like whatever.
Right.
But that I thought that one was fine, but whatever, it's perfectly fine. Linkin Park album. News this week: Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al of Dubai makes the largest donation ever, giving 7 billion euros to form an educational foundation in the Middle East.
It's not all bad news.
No, that's so much money.
Yeah.
Movies this week. Spider-Man 3 is still number one. It's going to clean up, but it is probably going to get unseated by the cinematic juggernaut of this week's new release, everybody. Get ready. Buckle up your seatbelts. The legend returns as you've never seen him before.
Get yourself a pair of jammies.
Donkey! Oh, how you go?
Some people just don't understand boundaries.
It is Shrek the Thoid.
Oh boy.
Is this the one
more
with
like Shrek the Turd?
Is this the one with JT?
Yes.
I don't know where he's not.
You don't know where Shrek
Love
is?
On the contrary.
So you do know where he is?
I'm possibly more or less not definitely rejecting the idea that I undeniably do or do not know where he shouldn't probably be. If that indeed wasn't where he isn't.
I do love the Pinocchio character.
That's
in Shrek.
Funny.
But I was hating Shrek before it was cool. always disliked Shrek.
See, I am willing to go to bat for Shrek 1 and 2. Well, I know it's like the thing to do, it's just Shrek all sucks. 1 and 2, I think, are fine. They're fun.
Sure.
Yes.
Obviously,
I think that's fair.
Over time, you start to see the strings and the dream workedness and the...
And the, like, trying to be super relevant with references.
Yeah.
Like, the Matrix jokes are like, you gotta cut that out.
You should, this movie, I found basically unwatchable.
I did see this one, but for what it's worth,
I watched it for this.
I saw the fourth one.
I'm so sorry.
As part
Shrek
of my
Forever After,
It was like a reboot
or
it's
Shrek
like,
4D yeah. at Universal Studios.
Shrek has to go back in time to ensure the first movie unfolds as it needed to.
Right.
And I got dragged to that one, and I was
Future
like,
two?
And I went in like, oh no, here we go, because the third one I heard was so bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the fourth one, I was like, this was remarkably fine.
Fourth one's fine. It's not good. It's not. It's fine. This one is so bad, and for all the reasons everyone gives Shrek shit for.
Yeah.
Constant and pop music.
Yeah, including a rare use of Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. Very upsetting to me.
I hated Shrek for stupid reasons.
Okay.
Because I thought it was not that remarkable a film, and definitely not a remarkable film franchise. But it can't be understated how it broke so many fucking records.
Yep.
And because Disney doesn't ever follow up on its animated hits until now, they just kept making more of them. And they kept, this is, at the time, Shrek the Third, highest animated movie opening of all time.
Sure.
Non-adjusted for inflation. Mm-hmm. I think the third highest movie opening of all time, despite terrible reviews. And I have a grudge against it ever since it released up against Incredibles and, like, did it take the Oscar?
It beat the Incredibles. So. Yeah, I think
well,
it
like Pixar in top
Shrek.
Three movies.
Like
the
Shrek
first
2.
One,
Shrek would, 1 was 01.
Yeah, so it was the Incredibles.
That's not Incredibles. Oh. Monsters Inc. is 01.
Oh, gross! That one's
right.
awful.
No, Shrek beat Monsters Inc. I remember that.
Yeah, but just that I don't know. I found it really annoying because there doesn't exist a franchise, an animated franchise at all. There's no basis for this. Mm. Usually, it's something. You get and maybe
like at best it becomes a TV show or they make a direct to DVD garbage thing
and I think
but DreamWorks has turned that into a thing. There's three Kung Fu Pandas, there's two How to Train Your Dragon,
there's three Madagascar,
and those are all fine.
Yeah,
like
I think their biggest fault is just not being exceptional and kind of time capsules, like you won't be able to, when you think of the word Pinocchio you think of fucking Disney's Pinocchio.
I don't recall either Train Your Dragon or Kung Fu Panda being as egregious with like the timeliness.
No, I actually really like those two. Those are my two favorite DreamWorks films.
Yeah.
But watching this movie, I think I'm really trying to watch it with like the public perception of like a trilogy where like we're going to bookend this or make this epic. This is not epic. This seems like the third episode of a new season of a television show. They introduce some new characters, but there's like no bookend to it. And I think I have to imagine the audience was pretty weirded out by that. We don't usually get a third movie in 2007. It was like, this will never stop.
Yeah.
There was at least some evidence in Spider-Man 3 that this might be over. But this is like, Shrek has no signs of stopping. They're just going to keep flooding the theaters with these movies. And this one is unexceptional. And the public kind of turned on the whole franchise at that point.
I'm just thinking, like, we did 2 weeks ago, Austin Powers. We're talking about Shrek 3 now. 2017, I'm ready for either of these franchises to come back. They both, like... They both shine too far, too fast. But
you end up burning out. You become like first party PlayStation games.
Yeah.
Minor hit, annual sequel, gone in 5 years.
These three Shrek movies are spread over 6 years.
They are.
That's not churning them out.
Yeah, but still,
it is in terms of like animation, especially computer animation.
Yes, but from an audience perspective, it's like it's not every year there's a new Shrek movie.
I think
there's also like
horrifically
TV specials,
ugly films.
I think
the fourth movie is only like 4 years old at this point. Like it's not like it's been gone for a long time.
I think they're ugly films.
Yeah.
And like
I think
I'm,
that's on purpose.
That's
though.
On purpose.
I guess so. Because
I'm just ready for Mike Myers to like be in a big movie again.
Ugly character models on the set of the first two Harry Potters. That's what Shrek looks like to me. But why not? More, fine. Whatever. Mike Myers, I love him that much.
Yeah.
Here's a clip.
So let me set this up. Tim and Eric kind of got on my radar like around this time because the first season of Tim and Eric Awesome Show, great job. So this is also one of their kind of, this was more of like their stage show stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They would always do fake ads for stuff that, like, they're more mocking. Like, their stage show would have a musical number dedicated to Papa John's.
Mm-hmm.
Then a couple years later, they would do an actual Totino's pizza roll commercial. But also around this time, they were hyping Shrek 3, even though they had nothing to do with it.
You're positive.
Yes.
It's not a Totino's pizza roll situation.
I don't, why would,
but what is this clip?
This would be DreamWorks being way ahead of the curve on viral marketing, but this is just Tim and Eric promoting Shrek 3.
Like legit promoting?
No. Mm-hmm.
As a joke.
Got
it.
Hi, I'm Eric Wareheim here chatting to you about Shrek 3 coming out this weekend, May 18th, and more specifically the director, Chris Miller. You might know him from the voices of Shrek 2 and also Madagascar and also Sinbad, The Legend of the Seven Seas. Chris is perfect for this project because he did a voice on Shrek 2 and he knows the whole system and how it goes and the comedy and the different timing for animation.
And that's it. And like awkward smile.
Chris Miller is one of two directors of Shrek, the Shrek franchise.
But getting out away from these movies, TV.
And you had to. This fucking obliterated the box office, killed everything.
Well, speaking of Adult Swim, three new shows premiered on May 13th, 2007. Two of these I know nothing about.
If it's Adult Swim, I should know something.
So the three shows were The Drinky Crow Show, Fat Guy Stuck in Internet, and Super Jail.
Super Jail's amazing.
Which
I never stand Super Jail.
I love Super Jail.
I love David Wayne, so like that he has a animated series.
Super Jail's like the Green Day Dookie album cover come to life and given a series.
Yeah, it is so ugly.
Yeah.
So ugly.
But it's beautiful.
Same
it's
with Fat Guy
so
Stuck
well
in the
done.
Internet. Drinky Crow, I love. Yeah. Just the aesthetic of Drinky Crow was gorgeous.
I think that's the Tony Millionaire design, because it's weird, because that started out as animated sequences on SNL. Like in the early 2000s, and
Drinky Crow,
yeah, they were SNL animations, and I don't remember the show that well. I remember not digging it, but I think Henry will like go to bat for it because he's a big Tony Millionaire fan.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I mean, definitely out of the three, it's the one that I liked the most.
And it makes me sound a little old, but I love Tim and Eric immediately. I love Tom Goes to the Mayor immediately. Fat Guy Goes Stuck in the Internet was sort of like Adult Swim thinks I'll watch anything as long as it's weird. I do not care for this.
What is it?
It's like live action and a fat guy who gets sucked inside the internet.
There's just constant green screen and like weird animation-y sort of special effects.
I think Adult Swim has had a lot of hits and misses with their live action stuff, but Your Pretty Face Is Going to Hell is a pretty decent evolution of that formula. It's pretty funny, actually. Love Adult Swim. One of the few things I make, like my appointment viewing is Adult Swim. Sunday I'll watch Adult Swim. Rick and Morty, baby.
Yay.
Gonna make a hard pivot to some of the series finales of this week.
Oh, no.
May 13th, 2007, the series finale for Seventh Heaven, which I think, like, it was one of those shows where, like King of the Hill, they intended it to end, like, a season earlier, and it just surprise got renewed. So somebody gets married. I don't know.
Whereas the last episode of Community on NBC said, depends on what fails.
Yeah.
And it turns out on WB, probably everything.
Yeah.
We're going to. Seventh Heaven needs to stick around this year.
The very next day, May 14th, 2007, the King of Queens series finale airs. And it is surprisingly high stakes and also a little bit depressing. Because I watched it. It's one of those shows where if it's airing on syndication, I'll watch it. Because. Kevin James, he's very funny, especially on that show. And yeah, Leah Remini is great too. And what's his face? George Costanza's dad.
Jerry Stiller.
Yeah. They're all really good. Even Patton Oswalt. I know he is not proud of it. But
CBS
like,
sitcoms I listened to on the radio and looked forward to it while I was delivering Chinese food throughout college.
But so here is, this is from Wikipedia, the description of the finale. Doug, having discovered that Carrie did not get rid of her apartment in Manhattan as she was supposed to 3 weeks ago, tells her he wants a divorce.
Jesus.
Carrie wants to stay together and plans to go to China to pick up their adopted child.
What?
Doug
and
Carrie race to China, each attempting to claim their baby before the other.
That's terrible.
On the way to China, they reconcile. Carrie finds out, after adopting, that she is pregnant and she's overwhelmed. A flash forward to a year later shows a messy, hectic household with both Doug and Carrie struggling to care for two small children.
So they were broken up, I guess?
Oh, my God.
Why would Doug and Carrie ever get divorced? Like, I thought they were such a nice couple.
This working class dude who drives for UPS has an apartment in Manhattan as well as in Queens.
And I don't think in 97 or 98 that we're going to be talking about earlier seasons of King of Queens all that much. So I put the theme in there just because.
My eyes are getting weird.
Yes.
This song is 20 years too late. Weird.
But I love this. My back is getting tight. God. I'm sitting here in traffic on the Queensboro Bridge tonight. But I don't care, cause all I wanna do is cash my check and drive right home to you.
You need a saxophone.
Cause
baby,
there it is.
All my life I will be driving home to you.
God.
And if you want to watch King of Queens in 2017, just watch Kevin Can Wait.
It's TBS seeming following that formula.
Just look at any channel. There's a very good chance it's on it's syndicated. I see it pop up on syndication all the freaking time.
Oh, yeah.
And moving on to some season finales, the season 2 finale of How I Met Your Mother is set at the wedding for Marshall and Lily. And this is also where Ted and Robin break up.
Oh, no.
They got together at the previous season finale, and they don't get back together until much later. Mm-hmm. But another couple that got together this week on May 17th, 2007, on the season finale of The Office, Jim and Pam finally get together. The episode ends. This is called The Job because Jim goes to New York, and I think also Michael Scott and a couple of other characters. They all go to New York to interview for like a Dunder Mifflin corporate job.
Mm-hmm.
It's implied that I think the job was Jim's, but he didn't want it. He wanted to stay in Scranton because that's where Pam is. And this is one of the most heartwarming scenes in the entirety of The Office where Pam thinks that he's going to move to New York and that it just didn't work out. And then it does happen.
And if he never comes back again, that's okay. We're friends. And I'm sure we'll stay friends. We never got the timing right. You know? I shot him down and then he did the same to me. But you know what? It's okay. I'm totally fine. Everything is going to be totally fine.
Sorry. Are you free for dinner tonight?
Yes.
All right. Then it's a date.
And then, I remember her.
She's literally so happy that she.
I remember this.
Yeah,
she's like,
so sweet.
And then she looks at the camera.
I'm sorry. What was the question?
It was very sweet.
Yeah, I do heavy work and just let The Office play on Netflix nowadays, and it's a fine show. And I was a huge fan of the Gervais Stephen Merchant show, and legitimate suspense on the Jim and Pam situation because it never technically happened on The Office show with. Jim and Pam
until the Christmas
special.
Or
Jim and Dawn.
Tim and Dawn.
Yeah.
Until the Christmas special, but so I just assume. Well, if they want to, clearly they want more than 12 episodes.
Yeah.
So
that was restraint. That it was, I think, the third season.
The
finale?
Fourth season, they're married, and after that, they're married forever.
And four, Jesus, man, season four is also the show gets really good then because of Idris Elba. The four or five cameos, and then that brings in Holly, I guess, shortly after that. So, the show pivots pretty hard, but it stays fun.
This is also where, why am I blanking on the guy's name? Ryan, he becomes...
Novak?
DJ Novak?
He becomes the corporate guy, which is great because he's, the intern in the first season and just goes to his head. He becomes, this... slick New York guy.
Well, just the last shot of this episode where it's him getting the phone call. I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. And then Mindy Kaling behind him starts talking, blah blah blah, and he's just like, we're breaking up.
Yeah,
and just has the everything's coming up Milhouse look on his face. It's just so cute,
so hateable.
Yeah,
very hateable. Then he gets very hateable.
Yes, that's it for TV
games this week. The big thing that happened is May 16th, 2007.
Are you giggling?
10 years ago. Some of you will remember this. It was a Halo 3 beta.
Halo 3
that Crackdown that we already talked about. The Xbox 360.
You didn't invite me to this.
The open world game where you throw cars launched with, the reason you wanted to buy Crackdown is because Halo 3, the big Microsoft FPS shooter with Master Chief, was going to have a beta, multiplayer beta, and Halo 2 multiplayer was the thing in 04 and 05. Mm-hmm. So here we are, the new next-gen Halo 3 beta, and we streamed this.
24? Not,
we didn't stream it. We played with our readers via forum posts for 24 hours. Mm-hmm. At the time, I swear there were only three maps. Mm-hmm. So we played this forever. And here's our pal who was our coworker then, Christian, just walking around the office, and we just put up all these weird YouTube videos of us playing the game's radar.
So who sucks and who's good?
Everybody sucks. I'm good.
How do you compare this to Lost Planet?
It's totally different.
And it's not funny. It's just there's so many clips of 2007 me playing Halo 3, and I grabbed another one that just says 24 hours of this shit. I don't know what the clip is. Oh, walking into OXM.
Hi.
What brings you here? I'm just about to play against Brett and Charlie.
I know, and they're too incoherent to actually talk, so I thought maybe I'd come track you down.
Sure. Well, as you can see, the graphics are like nothing you've ever seen before.
It's a blank screen. but yeah, it's just all these videos of like us dicking around at a time when our office is really starting to gel and become... Yeah.
And the internet wasn't doing that. The other sites weren't doing that.
Like we were, you know, it was a weird... it's even like the clips are called like Gorilla Games Radar something. And it really was. Like we don't have express permission to do what we're doing. We're just like, well, we're a website. Why wouldn't we do this? And... I don't know, but that Halo 3 beta ran for like a few days, and it was like a big deal.
It's still happening now, where like every big shooter has to have a beta.
Yeah, yeah, but it's
the first
like
one.
If you're it's in a one Switch of the owner. Last of like the Zone Avengers, Metal Gear demo, or the Final Fantasy VII, and not
Tobal.
Yeah, and Tobal.
But like, and even just if you're a Switch owner, recently, as of this recording, Splatoon 2 had the test fire, which is like, yeah, we're going to do stress tests and performance tests on all the servers and all that garbage.
Factor in none of this when it comes out. The online will be terrible.
Yeah. But like, I don't know. This was like one of the biggest at the time.
Yeah, for real. Because the Xbox 360 wasn't as widely adopted yet. It needed to prove a reason to exist, and there was no Halo game.
Well, Gears of War was out.
That's true, but like as far as like it needed a Halo game, and it had been a year without one, and Microsoft asked people to buy a full price franchise they've never heard of that isn't Halo in order to access Halo early.
Yeah. But yeah,
that franchise was really good. I ended up really enjoying Crackdown.
I loved Crackdown. also out this week, video games, a lot of other stuff. Innocent Life, a futuristic Harvest Moon on PSP. Resident Evil 4 came to PC. I think this is the Ubisoft published one, maybe. It's a weird story for that one. Touch the Dead on Nintendo DS.
Lovely, lovely.
Weird game.
Poke?
MLB.
Poke? Don't poke.
MLB 07, the show on PS3 and PSP. Mm-hmm. And then Etrian Odyssey debuts on the Nintendo DS, which is a turn-based RPG kind of dungeon crawlery game with an exceptional Yuzo Koshiro soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And if Yuzo Koshiro worked on East, but also Streets of Rage 1 and 2, you've definitely heard a lot of crazy, awesome Yuzo Koshiro music. Also, Taito Legends on PS2, Aegis Wing on XBLA, a free XBLA game with combined development between Carbonated Games and a group of Microsoft interns. It was a completely free, pretty decent side-scrolling shooter, like in a spaceship. It's backwards compatible on Xbox One, so you can still download it. Wow. And it was all right.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It was like the next Hexic, where it's just like, hey, it's free.
Yeah,
you're going to get
free.
It.
Dude, the soundtrack to Hexic is
and
pretty good.
If you look at your achievements, you're constantly reminded of it because of where it is alphabetically.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
moving into comments from 302010.net, just a couple to whet your appetite. You should go check out the website and see what everybody has to say because these comments have been great.
Mm-hmm.
But here's Alexander saying, Yola Tengo's I Can Hear the Heart Beating as One is very rightfully heralded as one of the greatest records of the 90s. While it musically spans a wide range of diverse styles, including folk, noise rock, shoegaze, drone, and hipster jazz, it consistently maintains this pensive yet inviting mood throughout its running time. Essential cuts are Autumn Sweater, Wear an American Band, Sugar Cube, Stockholm Syndrome, Damage, and Moby Octopad.
Brett, if you have not seen the video for Sugar Cube, you probably should.
It sounds familiar, but probably haven't.
It was on my bootleg every Mr. Show tape because it even cuts down the music to get out Bob Odenkirk and David Cross lines as they take Yola Tengo to rock school in the most sketchy music video I've ever seen. There's a lot of dialogue in it.
And then from Cubby Lover, I'm sure I'm the only one, but I really enjoyed the Shining miniseries.
Oof. Okay.
I felt like it kept with the book much better, thanks.
That is true.
Than the movie.
Yeah.
And I enjoy the book so much better than the movie. The movie is still great, but the miniseries did a good job with the source material, and I love the hotel exploding more than Jack being frozen in a stupid maze.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Urge to Kill Rising.
I'll give you that. The Shining, Kubrick, total classic, stupid ass ending.
Yeah.
Iconic, memorable, real stupid.
Yeah. Well, the hotel's rewarding him for failure.
Yeah.
However you want to interpret it.
That's how I interpret it.
But yeah, again, we usually read a lot more, but just to kind of keep the show from going for 2 hours.
We have another announcement.
Oh, yeah. The deaths this week. 1987, Rita Hayworth, 68. Gave good face.
Gave good face. She helped people escape from Shawshank.
That's also...
And, oh, man. Gilda and Lady from Shanghai... She fucking kills. She was amazing.
And in 2007, this same week, Jerry Falwell, 73.
Also amazing, but for very different reasons. He was a terrible person. He's a televangelist type. Blamed Hurricane Katrina on the gays.
All right.
Stole PTL from Jim and Tammy. He's a greedy, mean son of a bitch, and I don't like him. And he's dead.
I thought Jerry Falwell was the was Ginger Spice from the Spice Girls.
I got that confused for so long.
Jerry Falwell.
I'm like,
he also added a Teletubby, and you don't do that.
Yeah,
like, Ginger Spice.
Exactly.
What? But also, I guess before we get into the final segment of the show, this is probably my last 30-2010. Which sucks because this has been so much fun and is an idea that I've like been kicking around since 2013. I think my first doc was like, Chris, did you know 30 years ago Snow White re-released in theaters?
Wow.
In 1983? And you're like, yeah, it happens all the fucking time.
I probably said every 6 years, man.
This has been super fun. But as we mentioned on Bonus Time, our Patreon-only show a little while ago, I got an offer to go back to Capcom where I was before all this, and I'll be working on some fun stuff there. But even before, when Chris and I both worked at Capcom, a lot of Laser Time, well, all of it, still existed concurrently, and I would show up on shows all the time. And like, and much like Henry left to go work at his day job at Fandom, he's still on every Talking Simpsons. He's still on... in the periphery a lot. Like a lot of that stuff won't necessarily be totally absent, but week in, week out, for sure, this will probably be my last one, because if you know games, we're getting into the E3 Comic-Con PAX traveling gauntlet that happens all the time. But that is one of the potential upsides, is that if you're a fan, that we've bumped into you at shows all throughout the year, but in the last couple of years, not at all. So hopefully, you know, PAX, Comic-Con, things like that, we can actually start, I'll at least be able to say, hey, whereas for years I haven't been able to. But this show's been super fun. I think everyone here does an excellent job.
Yay.
Because it's a dynamic that works very well, because like everyone here's gaps fill in very well. Like, none of us here kept up with 2000-era reality TV. And like,
somebody has to lose the trivia every week at the end.
And also just the, like... the music stuff, like, I keep up with music, but I feel like the genres I don't know, Diana does, and obviously movies in general, the two of you have that down completely.
Yep.
And I don't know, and then games, there's, like, any pocket the three of us might have, one of us probably knows. I don't know, it's worked out extremely well. But, and obviously everybody's been super awesome supporting the show, not just on Patreon, but commenting on the site, supporting on social media, like, and random people would be like, I love the show, this is such a great premise, and friends of ours who grew up outside of the U.S. are like, this is a great way to find out what you guys were doing when I was, you know, when I was this age in Australia or Brazil or wherever it was. There's like, this is all new to me. So thanks or bye. I don't know.
Well, you're saying you're not going to disappear completely, but putting this show together is a lot of work.
Yeah. And the show itself, like just the way we record it now as essentially a day job, short of like rescheduling that kind of stuff, it's hard to know exactly what will happen there. But like, the show's not canceled. We're definitely the show maintains, and it's all you'll get from all you'll lose from me is segues into Transformers the movie, which I've said all I can say.
Complaints about black costumes,
black costume Spider-Man. The only thing I'm sad I miss is literally the next episodes that we record is the beginning of the road to Star Trek: The Next Generation.
She wanted to like. You wanted to lay out the pre-production as part of 302010.
Well, a slight spoiler, Gene Roddenberry is about to announce the cast, and when they revealed that a balding English guy playing a French man was going to be the new captain, and the previous captain was James T. Kirk, who punches and screws everything in the galaxy, like it's like, what? You can't! Star Trek is ruined! And it's like, whoops, it turns out he is one of the greatest fictional characters that ever happened. Yeah. But love Next Generation. Anyway.
Once we get into Next Gen, I think I'm going to throw out one intentional mistake. Every time you're not here, just to make sure you come back and correct me.
That's going to hurt.
But I mean,
everyone loves Dr. Beverly Carrier.
God damn it.
Bust in like the Kool-Aid man.
To answer the question...
Gates McFadden!
Will you have a replacement in the new season? Brett, I did include a clip. If you just go to like the last 10 seconds of it, you'll have the answer.
I'm going to die on the way home? Oh, no.
Oh, let's just replace him with someone younger and cuter.
We got to get home and screw.
Pretend he was here the whole time.
But again, 302010.net is where you can leave comments.
Indeed, people.
And the Patreon support is as relevant as ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe more relevant in the future. Yeah. We will see. We love you guys, and we do thank you for your support. So stick with us, please. Throughout this transition, shouldn't be that rough, but yeah.
Because again, everything that we did for 5 years was still while we had day jobs, and like all of us include, like, and we still found a way to make it work. So like, it's it's just a matter of like reassessing how we do what.
But yeah, our Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime is where it's the exclusive home of Bonus Time, our weekly show where we shoot the breeze about stuff in 2017. I recently just watched a show on Chris's recommendation, Brockmire. Hilarious.
Yes.
Who knew that Hank Azaria could still like hold the show together like 30 years after he started on The Simpsons? So that's pretty insane. But yeah, we also have tons of movie commentaries. We do two movie commentaries per month live with our community as part of Monday Night Movies. And we usually do stuff that we talk about on 302010, tying all that together. We also do TV show commentaries, wrestling match commentaries that are no sync needed. You just watch it with us. And it's also the home of Cheap Podcast, the pro wrestling podcast.
And on top of that, there's also, gosh, so many things. If you like video games, there's Video Game Apocalypse, which is a weekly show entirely about video games.
Oh, yeah.
There's Talking Simpsons, where they go chronologically through The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And I think I'm coming up pretty soon, because I forced my way in with violence.
Right about
and
around this time.
Attempted kidnapping.
Multiple times, Diane.
Yes, yeah. It's been a multi-year campaign, but damn it, I made it. And if you want to talk classic movies and stuff, you can reach me on Twitter at ListenANerd.
That brings us to the final portion of the show.
Last quiz down.
And only the second one where I have to participate, and I will lose.
Oh, Diana's doing this. That's right.
I'm doing the quiz down this time, and these are two good ones. Yeah, two people with birthdays this week, one male, one female. Let's start with born Bernice Frankel in 1922. She served as a truck driver in the Marines during World War II, originated the role of Yenta the Matchmaker in Fiddler on the Roof, won two Emmys and a Tony, starred in a popular TV spinoff, said no to another spinoff of a show that she was on. Younger. Good job, guys!
Yes!
What the fuck?
What a strange
Dave
new world
is happening!
What? This can't work anymore. This.
Oh, yeah, wait. She's, what? Wait, Flo is it? Or no?
What? Maud.
Maud. That's it.
Yep. I was going to say younger than her TV mother by 1 year.
Yes. Wow.
All right, give me the boy.
I got the Golden Girls, dang.
I am the king of men. Let me hear it. Redemption is mine.
Okay, this one was a lot of fun. Born in 1944, he has 329 credits on IMDb and counting, including Maniac Cop 2, Badass 3, Badasses on the Bayou, Pool Boy, Drowning Out the Fury, Guns.
Is this going in ascending order?
These are just the best titles I could find. Shoot the Hero, The Haunted World of El Super Bisto, Runaway Train, From Dusk Till Dawn 1, 2, 3, and the TV series.
Oh my. What?
Anaconda and Con
John
Air.
John
Voight? No.
And Con Air.
John Mount? No.
Everybody's favorite bit player.
Oh my god.
He has starred as a title character in two movies. One that was fun, one that was not.
It's not Alfie.
That were previewed in Grindhouse.
Danny Trejo. Oh,
yes.
Jeez.
He was born in the
40s? 1944.
Good god.
I know, he's a lot older.
Dave.
Oh, dang.
Than you think.
B. Arthur, wow.
Timeline.
B. Arthur and Danny Trejo. Can I have dinner with both of them at some point? Oh, wait, B. Arthur's dead.
B. Arthur, R.I.P. But Danny Trejo, he's apparently like the coolest guy in the universe. Besides the fact he did time in Quentin. I think he was there when...
Cash played?
Well, yeah, when Johnny Cash played. He did Folsom first, then Quentin.
Shout out to Machete.
Yeah, and then he got into like rehab and helping people, and he will show up for any movie to help you out. If you are making a student film, he will show up for you.
Show up to have a severed head ride a turtle in Breaking Bad.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
He is so cool.
Take us out, Elston. Anything you want.
Well, man, anything I want.
Favorite thing.
Well,
it has to be pop culture and history.
I'll do my recurring going out song because of all the things I keep leaving. I think I did this one for Talk Radar when we did that like 6 years ago at this point. But it's Radical Dreamers from Chrono Cross, baby, which comes out in 2000, so we're not going to get to for a while. But it's a tearjerker. Such a good song from the end of Chrono Cross, which is not as good as Chrono Trigger, but it's still really damn good. We'll see you. I won't see you, but plenty of Laser Time stuff still to come. Like, again, this seems like as a bigger send-off than it is. I just won't be here every week. But thanks for listening. Thanks for all your support. This show has been a ton of fun for over a year and a half now. But this has been great, and I'll see you soon.